I would love to listen to the Meet 40 podcast with Elizabeth and Mark Allen Miller. This is Lux from the band Small Giants, and you're listening to the Meet 40 cast.
That's the record button. Have we started?
We have started.
So, this is the Meet 40 cast. You might always start like that. Who knows?
Hi, hi, hi.
Hello. Thank you for joining us for season 4.
Episode 22.
Episode 22, our 97th.
97th, I believe, is episode. The correct number. Yep.
Get ready and be excited for our 100th episode. We have something special planned.
Mm-hmm. Should be a lot of fun, and you can be a fly on the wall for that gathering if it works out the way we're hoping.
It's going to. I'll see to it.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm Elizabeth McDuffie.
I'm Mark Allen Miller.
I am a little sad.
Why are you sad?
Because I looked in Good Pods and you looked in Apple Podcasts, and what did we find?
I see where you're going with this. No new reviews.
A whole lot of nothing. That's what we found.
Whimper, whimper.
Pout, pout.
Whine, moan, complain.
You can turn these frowns upside down. You can do it very easily. And the easiest thing to do is to give us your 5-star review in Apple Podcasts with writing. Write whatever you want. Tell us what you had for breakfast. Share your favorite brunch recipe.
Mm.
Tell us what you're making for Easter dinner.
Mm-hmm. Then copy
tell
and paste
us
it.
Oh. What your favorite episode we did so far is.
Oh, yeah, right. That's true. Then copy and paste it into Good Pods and any other place that accepts reviews with writing and give it a 5-star or
a lot more of them do, too. There's places to at least rank podcasts in Spotify now. I believe CastBox also offers that feature. And your reviews not only make us happy and give us fun things to read on the podcast, but they help us in the algorithms.
Helps us get in front of more earballs.
And so you're doing your friends and family a favor by helping them find us more easily. Because, of course, you've told them about the Meet 40 cast, but they might be wondering how to find it.
Indeed. Before we go any further with things like housekeeping, why are we here today?
Well, we're here because I had a fabulous conversation. I was very honored to have Marina Barthania join me as my guest on the podcast.
Cool lady.
She's amazing. She is a perfumer and an astrobiology doctoral researcher at the University of Westminster and Natural History Museum in London. What? She is a perfumer space scientist.
That's amazing.
Cooler than that?
I'm just impressed that you spat that whole sentence out without a flaw. That was great.
I can do that. Her MB perfumes are amazing, but she also founded in 2017 Arome Atom, where she creates the scents of space.
Which, by all accounts, are not always lovely, but I imagine she does interesting things with them, right?
Arome Atom. Discover the smell of space.
It's wild.
It's super cool.
It is. It's super cool. I'm very curious.
You can learn all about this. We'll put her website in the show notes.
Definitely.
For sure. But she's a fascinating, cool lady who also enjoyed watching The Last of Us.
Oh, yes. Which we just finished, too. Very, very good.
Has a little bit of a fondness for Pedro Pascal, which is super understandable.
Yeah, it is. I get it.
And she's just delightful and witty and a little impatient with chemophobia, as am I. You guys know what chemophobia is?
Do tell.
Well, If you're one of those people who thinks that you need to be fearful of chemicals, don't be afraid when I tell you, you're made out of them already.
Oh, yeah.
They live in your brain. You need them to fire thoughts.
Our whole body is made out of chemicals and compounds.
All of it.
The whole world.
Of course, certain things can
compounds.
Make you sneezy or a headache than other things, but
true.
Just that blanket.
Yeah, the blanket, that's where I draw the line. It's like, yes, okay, everybody's got their individual sensitivities. Totally get it.
I have tons.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
I'm an allergy girl.
But, you know, as a rule of thumb, come on.
Oh, you'll hear all about that. We have a nice little chant rat.
Chant rat?
I think you need to get rid of that. Rant.
Chat.
Yes. You see what I did there?
I think I'm going to keep that. I think that was so great. A chant rat. Isn't that like an industrial night in like Chicago? Chant rat.
I don't know. Chant rats make me think it's time to clean house, which brings me to...
Housekeeping.
All the best ways to support us can be found on our website at meatfortea.com. There you will find ways to subscribe to the magazine, buy individual issues, whether physical print or PDFs. You'll find links to our podcast and to our spring store where we have... pint glasses and t-shirts and mugs and socks and aprons. And, you know, I'm a little bit shocked that we have not sold one apron because they are rad.
Maybe we should set a precedent and buy one ourselves just to, like, bump the numbers up.
Yeah. I don't know how people will see me in it because I don't wear an apron walking around in the world.
That's what Instagram is for.
Yeah, true.
Become a Meat for Tea influencer, Elizabeth.
I already am.
That's true.
So I think we should just let you guys, without further ado, tuck right into my lovely chat with Marina Barthania. She's fascinating and brilliant, and it was really a pleasure and just a huge honor to have a perfumer space scientist, I mean, come on the podcast.
So now you say, hey, Mark.
Hey, Mark.
Roll the tape. All right, Elizabeth. I'm rolling the tape.
Hello, Marina.
Hello, Elizabeth. You have a lovely voice.
So do you. I've been listening to a lot of your voice. I've been doing my homework. You've been on
a
fair number of podcasts.
Have you been listening to me in Spanish or just in English?
Just in English. My Spanish is... limited largely to ordering from a menu, and I can conjugate chinga. So, anyway, on that note, let me formally invite the illustrious perfumer and space scientist, Marina Barthania, to the Meat for Tea cast. It is our great honor to have you with us this afternoon, our time.
Thank you very much.
Evening.
It's my pleasure.
Your time.
It's my evening, yes.
Yes, and so sorry about the frantic messages an hour ago. While your time remained the same, most of America, including where we live, did this dumb thing called daylight savings times.
Yes, we do that
where
on Sunday.
All the, I hate it.
Yes, me too.
Don't you feel that it's just not necessary that we could just agree on a time and stay there?
I do. I completely agree. I mean, for the sake of an hour, I don't think it makes that much difference. And it's just easier for your body to just continue with the same routine than having to change the time you get up and you go to bed all of a sudden. But anyway, no saying
exactly.
These things.
Exactly. No. I mean, sleep scientists have been having their say about how detrimental the effects of switching the clocks forward and then back
are. Yes, they have.
And there's... Right?
I have actually been reading a lot about sleep books at the moment. So, yeah, I've been reading about it and hearing about it. Yes, I have. I've got very much into my well-being.
Yeah, well, you've had a few health issues that would bring that on.
Yeah, I have, but it's all good.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I'm just so thrilled to have you here. And I was rereading your lovely Nosings essay that we published in the Mugwort issue of Meat for Tea. And petrichor is one of my very favorite words. I like a lot of words involved with olfactive senses. They get such great words. But I never thought of it as the smell of life. That was such a wonderful eye-opener for me.
Well, I don't think anybody would say it's the smell of life as such. That's just the way I sort of interpret it because, you know, I kind of learned about the different microbes and that sort of thing. And in my head, just like space and perfume don't kind of go together, but in my head they do. So with petrichor, it was the same sort of thing. For me, it's like thinking about the future and what future humans that don't live on Earth would be looking for, you know, when they came back. It's like the smell of rain tells you that there is life around. So yeah, I couldn't help it. I just had to write about it.
I love it so much. I found it so intriguing. And it's just, it's more than an essay. It's a little short piece of speculative fiction set far, far in the future after the destruction of the planet. I love it so much.
Yeah. There's similar ones that go with other planets as well. So that was just the Earth one.
Are there really? Is there a series of these writings then?
Well, in my head and in my notes, there are. They don't all have form, as in like a finished kind of polished story, but like the one that you published, but they all exist in my head. I mean, the one that is mostly formed and finished is the one for Mars, because that's the subject of my PhD, and that's why I spend most of my time thinking about. And, you know, so humans on Mars and the arrival and the survival of humans on Mars is a big thing for me as well. So I did write about that too. And the perfume We Are the Martians is partly inspired by that as well, just like Ground Control was inspired by that story. So the perfumes all came out of those stories that I had written in various pieces here and there.
I'm so fascinated. What are you doing with these stories? I'd like to see them collected into a book. I think it would be a very intriguing read.
I don't know. I never thought about it. I suppose it was, for me, it's part of my creative process, but not necessarily to create a perfume. It's just the way my head makes a bit more fun of the science that I study. And I think it just makes it, for me, this might sound really silly to other scientists, but for me, it makes the science more human, and it just gives it some context in my head. And then pretty much everything I think about at some point gets linked to perfume or to smells of some kind. That's just the story of my life. So when I created the perfumes for Aromatum, so these are the actual perfumes, not the smelly smells of space for the educational project, I was thinking, right, I want to create these perfumes inspired by the science, but I also want them to have the human element. And so that's where those stories really helped me.
I love that so much. I want so badly to get my hands on your fragrances. I think we should bend Andrea Fender's ear at Sucre Bay.
I would be very happy for them to be available in the US, but I think it's what I've mentioned
before. So would
before.
I.
they used to be sold there, but the retailer closed, so not anymore. And because my life needs more hours, I need more hours in my life.
Yeah.
I just don't have enough time, because I've got two brands. I work for other brands. I've got my school, trying to finish my PhD. I have the educational outreach project. So all these things. And in the middle of that, I try to have some sleep and a bit of a life. So I just really don't have the time or the mental capacity to even think about anything else. And a lot of people are like, oh, you should contact this shop or that shop. And I would, but I just, one, I just hate selling myself. It's like, oh, buy my perfumes, they're great. I just can't do that. I simply cannot do it. But also, I just don't have the mental space to approach somebody and to think about it and to just think, how do I approach you? What do I say to you? That's a real constant in my life. You know, I'm quite happy sharing what I know, but I'm not very good at, you know, selling what I know. I like to share it, but not sell it, if that makes sense. So
that makes perfect
that's a problem.
Sense. If you'd like me to be your liaison with Sucrebe, I would be happy to.
Well, I would be more than grateful if you wanted to do that.
There is an offer. Now,
I'm very happy to take you up on that.
It might not be instantly because I think we're in the same boat. I think we both could use 30-hour days and we're stuck with these measly 24-hour ones that don't give us enough time.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
How are the PhD studies going?
It's pretty much, most of it is done. I just need to finish analyzing some data that was sent to me very late. I should have had it in April this year, but I didn't get it from my collaborator until October. And so because I've had to work so much, because at the moment things are very difficult, so one has to pay the bills as well. So I have to finish analyzing that data and writing about it. But I'm really halfway through my thesis or trying to finish my thesis. And in theory, I should be done with writing and handing in my thesis by the 4th of August.
Woohoo!
So after that, I'll just have to wait until the external and the internal examiners read my book, which I expect won't be until September or October because in August they'll be on holiday. So I expect I'll have my viva, which is my PhD defense. Probably I expect it'll be October, maybe November. So I'll be done with it before the end of this year with a bit of luck. And hopefully I will pass and I will then be a doctor. And if I don't pass,
Dr. Barthania.
Yeah, if I don't pass, I won't be a doctor, but I will have enjoyed the ride, I suppose, up until about now, because right now I just don't enjoy it anymore. I'm just so bored.
It's entered the tedious phase.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I have most of a PhD. I'm one of those legions of people that over here, at least, we call ABD.
What does that mean?
All but dissertation. All but dissertation.
Yes.
ABD.
Yeah.
I made it all the way through my coursework with good grades, excellent, well, 4.0 pretty much, as one does at that level.
Yeah.
And when it came time to do my area exams, I was single parenting my two younger children and moonlighting a retail job because people had stopped paying their child support.
Oh, goodness.
And it takes a lot of hubris for a single mom to think she can take all that on. But apparently I had that level of hubris. But when it came time to finish, my middle daughter, who was at the time was 15, 16, was having a challenging adolescence. And I realized that I'd exhausted all my critical thinking skills dealing with that. And the well was dry. There was nothing there.
Yeah. So. I understand.
But I'm still grateful for the studies. And I'm grateful for the accumulated knowledge. And that's all. It's all worth having gained.
What did you study?
I was in composition rhetoric, which is for lay people, writing and the teaching of writing.
Yeah, yeah.
So I studied the theory of everything that makes those first year writing classes work. Okay. And it's a dense theoretical field because there's feminist theory, there's social class in Marxist theories, there's theory of autobiography, there's a level of postmodern and post-structuralist theory, a psychoanalytic theory. That's what I liked about it. It's just so dense because I'm attracted to that.
Yeah.
But I'm also attracted to, and I think we are in agreement here, I like when complex theoretical ideas are expressed in a way that anybody can understand. And if they're told as stories, even better. If they're made entertaining and accessible, I think it makes the theories more worthwhile. And there's no reason why they should be this esoteric thing that nobody can understand, that's so densely impenetrable.
Yeah, I agree. I find that infuriating, actually.
Yeah, because I think if you know what you're talking about in your field, go ahead.
No, I was just saying I find that infuriating, you know, that way of stopping
people
from accessing things that should be accessible to everybody.
Yeah, so do I. I think if you really know what you're talking about in your field, you should be able to express it in such a way that you can give your research to your mom or to any random lay person, and they can read it and be entertained by it and grasp the concepts. And I did a lot of thinking and writing around the value of storying research is what I called it.
Yeah. Well, I am hoping to do something like that with my thesis, because I obviously it's dry in a way, because it is, you know, very, very analytical science, spectroscopy. It's dry, you know, it's not like a fun kind of subject, but there's nothing stopping you from writing in a way that flows, that, you know, that has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and that the writer is able to know whereabouts in the story they are at every point of the story, and they can go back and see, oh yeah, this came from here, or this is going there. And that is one of my objectives with my thesis. And I found it quite interesting, because my ex-partner, he writes. And I remember a few years ago just giving him some of my essays and him saying, yeah, but it's just so like scientist-like, he said. Like, what do you mean? It's just dry. And it's just like, it's like stating facts. And it's like, it's just boring. It's like, yeah, but this is what other scientists read. And they're not looking for a story. They're looking for, you know, the facts. And that's because we specialize in the field, and obviously we want to go to the facts that we're interested in. But when it comes to teaching or sharing what we do on something other than a scientific journal, there should be an ability to write in a more accessible and fluid manner. And I don't think that is a very common thing in science, although it is changing. It also depends on the type of science, I expect. But I think there is more interest nowadays in, you know, in communication and in talking about science in a way that's a bit, not necessarily fun, but certainly understandable for the layperson, so that they understand why maybe what we're doing is relevant to their lives, which I think is one of the main things that science should be doing. It's like, why is this relevant to people? You know, why should they care? Why should they be interested? And I think that's a big job for science, really.
Yeah, a big and important job, especially, I don't know if you, well, yeah, you do have the same problem. You're in the UK, right?
Yes.
So there's sort of, here in the States especially, we've got this just sort of mass anti-intellectual, anti-science, anti-expertise movement, which is terrifying, especially in an era where, you know, new vaccines are saving lives.
Yeah.
And those of us who have a tiny bit of sense realize that. But there's people putting a lot of lip service and energy towards just spreading their gospel that experts, science, and intellectuals are the untrustworthy ones.
Yeah, we should all trust YouTube and vloggers because they know the truth.
Do your own research, like they like to say, which means just...
Yeah, we have that problem here as well, Elizabeth.
Oh, I know. I mean, at least you don't have Boris anymore, right?
He's still around. People still speak about him. But I think also it depends a little bit where you are. So in London, when I'm in my sort of academic circles, when I'm at university or at the Natural History Museum, when I'm working there, I'm surrounded by my people. So that's not an issue.
Yes.
But then when I come back home to Glastonbury, which is, you know, where I am and where I am right now, I mean, Glastonbury is like the epicenter of this kind of thing, really, in the UK. And people they're literally like, they just push things on you. If I had £1 for every time somebody on the street has asked me about their horoscope or their birth chart and their astrology, whatever, because I'm an astronomer, I'd probably be rich.
That's a different thing.
I know, but I would be rich.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
I study astronomy, not astrology. Oh, but it's the same things. It's about the stars. And it's like, yeah. But,
no, it isn't.
But astronomy is about the science.
Not at all.
And astrology is something very old and archaic and superstitious. And you might enjoy it, but there's actually no science with it. And I listened to something yesterday, actually, which it kind of got my blood boiling, Elizabeth. I'm glad I can share it with you now because since yesterday it's been bothering me.
Yes, I love giving you a space to vent.
And if people want to believe in astrology, fine, believe what you want. If it makes your life better and makes you happier, as long as, you know, you don't use it to direct your life, which is what a lot of people do, and that's what bothers me, then fine.
Dangerous.
But, yeah, exactly. So yesterday I was listening to this lovely podcast, which is it's just a short podcast that is here in the UK from somebody who does a lot of nature stuff, and they do some natural perfume.
What's it called?
I can't remember. I'm so sorry, but it's some perfumer here in Somerset. I think I can't remember her name, and they do natural perfumes.
Is it the Aromatic Life?
I don't know. They only do it once a year. Once a month. So they do it on the first of every month.
Oh, okay. So it's not one of the ones I listen to.
No, they talk about the seasons in the countryside. And it is lovely. So they talk about, you know, the plants that are coming out in the month and the birds. And I absolutely love it. And obviously they sort of gear this towards whatever they're working on and the perfume. And it is really, really lovely. And then one of the women that does this, she writes the almanac, which is, you know, an almanac is like an old sort of type of style kind of book that tells you about the seasons, how they change and the moon and the sun. And there's a really like a lot of folklore in it. And it's lovely. I love this stuff. Don't get me wrong. I absolutely love it. And I'd be happy to buy it, even if I don't necessarily believe the whole astrology thing. But then she was talking about this book and saying this year's focuses on the science of the zodiac. And I'm like, oh, please don't say that. Say the zodiac.
No.
Just leave the science out.
Oh my gosh.
No science on the zodiac unless you want to talk about the stars and the constellations in the sky and you know, where the stars are from an astronomy point of view. But not in the astrology sense of things. And there's like, just, you know, if you want to believe things not scientific, fine, just don't call them science. Just don't call pseudoscience science. That's the thing that bothers me. If you don't want to believe it, don't believe it, but don't make it up. You know what I mean? So I find that difficult in Glastonbury.
Oh, that makes my blood boil too. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Just hearing those words together, science and zodiac, I'm like, no, it's wrong.
It's like, oh no, that's just, it's just something that it just bothers me again. It's just, if you want to see the romantic side of things, fine. Just don't mix it with science because it really has nothing to do with it. Maybe centuries ago it was science, but it isn't.
Well, and centuries ago also alchemy was considered to be a science, and people spent long hours trying to turn lead into gold. And you know, Isaac Newton got up to all sorts of unsavory things in his labs, including animals sewn together in bizarre ways. Sorry, listeners, that's gross, but he did that.
I know, it is true. People don't realize these things. There's absolutely nothing wrong with people knowing this. They should.
They should.
Yeah.
But, and I don't even know if I'd call zodiac pseudoscience so much as just folklore.
I agree. It's not even pseudoscience.
Folklore.
Yeah.
It's just folklore.
I don't know exactly what it is they say.
I happen to know what my sign is. And the other thing I happen to know is that any book of astrology has such generalized descriptions for the character traits that make up each sign that anybody can fit themselves into that particular slot.
Yes.
It's so general.
Yeah, I've actually done this as a kind of game when I've had a couple of drinks with friends. It's like, let's pick up the horoscope and see which one we are today. You know, and you could be any of them depending on the day you are. So I have been them all.
Yeah, I mean, as a fun folklore party game, something you use to enhance a character you're writing about in a story, fine. As a science, no, stop it.
Yeah. And, you know, I kind of feel
it's like the
bad.
Medical.
Yeah, exactly. I have some really good friends who believe in this stuff deeply. I mean, they have actually studied the whole astrology thing in depth, and they really believe in it. And I cannot understand it, but they know not to talk to me about it. And so that's fine. You know, I can do that. It's just when people try to change my mind, and this is what I find. People in Glastonbury try to change my mind about vaccines, about the government, about medicine, about astrology, about magic, about Reiki, about homeopathy. Any of these things that I don't believe in, they are so convinced that they are right that they will do anything they can to change my mind. And they do all this with a series of YouTube videos, which is the funniest thing. It's like, no. So, yeah, there you go. This is Glastonbury for you.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I mean, we have pockets of that. I'm in Massachusetts. And it's weird. It's a small, very largely... I live in a Five Sisters area of Massachusetts in Western Mass, and it's called that because there's five big universities all nearby: Mount Holyoke College, Smith College, Amherst College, but big UMass, big celebrated universities. Okay. That being said, you can drive like 40 miles out of a very kind of academic area and get into a little pocket where you will see like pro-Trump signage, and you'll run across rabid anti-vaxxers who think that the colloidal silver is all they need. Mm-hmm. And it's wild. It's just wild to me.
Yeah,
it seems to cross over with clean beauty. That phrase gets my goat.
Oh, yes, that's, yeah. No, chemical free, that's the one that really gets me. Chemical free,
no phthalates, no
parabens or any
sodium lauryl sulfate, no parabens.
Yeah. No.
Like you really want a mascara with no preservatives. That's dangerous. You will go blind.
Yeah, I know. But it's the no chemical thing that really just, it's like start using words properly. And the whole clean beauty thing is just such a con. It really is such a con. It's like, just call it something else.
Oh my gosh. Calling
it clean. The other beauty isn't dirty. You know, it's just, the problem is that clean beauty implies that everything else is dirty, and that is not the case. That is the problem.
Yeah, dirty and or dangerous.
Yeah.
I hear it. What's one thing I hear people talking about that's in fragrances that these clean fragrances don't have? Hormone disruptors. Oh. In scare quotes.
Yeah. Well, the kind of musk that are forbidden, I suppose they mean, the ones that cannot be used in perfume anyway, legally. So,
right. Yeah. There is this regulatory thing, IFRA.
Yeah.
They should know about it. It exists for a reason.
Yeah, and
oh my gosh.
Also here in the UK and in Europe, we have the EU Cosmetic Directive, which is even more draconian in most cases than IFRA. I mean, IFRA is different from the EU regulation. And IFRA is something that people can sign up to, but it's not compulsory. I mean, it's good practice and people probably should. If they're creating things, particularly for others. But if you're selling anything in Europe or in the UK, you must comply with the European directive or the UK directive, which is exactly the same. And that one can be worse than IFRA, much more restrictive in some cases. Not always, but yeah. And it's there for a reason. And yes, it goes too far sometimes. It really does. But at the end of the day, it's you've got to be careful, because if you do what you want without actually knowing the potential risks of what you're doing, you can cause some serious damage to other people. And if you do it to yourself, fine, you've done it to yourself, you know, that's it. But if you give it to a family member or a friend, or you sell it, then you're doing that to somebody else, and you never know what somebody's going to react to, because at any point we could all have an allergic reaction to anything, really. That's the scary thing. You could have an allergic reaction to just about anything you eat every day, and suddenly one day you have an anaphylactic shock and there you go. So this is why we need to be so careful, because nowadays we consume so many things with fragrance in them. And with fragrance ingredients that are full of allergens, that we are constantly taking in these allergens from everything. It's not just perfume, it's the food we eat, it's the drinks, it's the soap, it's the air fresheners, it's the fragrance when you go into shops. You know, it's just there constantly and you can't escape it. And you don't know at what point your body's going to go, sorry, I've had enough. So there you go. That's why you need to be careful, and that's why it's important to not dismiss these regulations in the way so many people do. And may I just say something here that I think is very important. I was one of these people. Please. Many, many, many years ago. So I didn't know about these things a long time ago. I didn't. I was wrong. And then I thought, well, I suppose if I'm going to be against something, I should really educate myself, you know? And there's nothing wrong with not knowing something and talking about it and saying, okay, I'm going to educate myself. And then when I did educate myself, I realized how wrong I was. And then I changed my mind. And I think a lot of people are just so stubborn and so stuck in their ways because they can't quite, I don't know, they don't like the idea of being wrong, of saying, I was wrong, I got it completely wrong, I was such a muppet. But actually, this is the truth, so this is what we need to do now. Whereas I think that is such an important thing to realize, that we are all allowed to be wrong and to make mistakes and to rectify them and to say, I was wrong, please. Just don't think that you're stuck with the way you think forever, because we're all wrong at some point, and we're all learning, and we're all continuously discovering new things, and we should all you know, start getting away from this dogmatic and rigid ways of thinking that we have. And this kind of like war that's like, it's like, oh.
I couldn't agree more strongly.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, in the US actually, probably more than here in the UK. But in the US in particular, there is this, or there used to be this kind of war between natural perfume and the other type of perfume, the bad kind of perfume. You know?
It's ongoing. It's so dumb.
Boring.
It is the dumbest thing.
It's so boring. It's just get over yourselves, people.
Tiresome.
So bored. And I remember, because I specialized in natural perfume because I love it. I just love it. And that's the bottom line, you know. And I used to be, you know, quite silly about it many years ago, and now I'm not. But it was like, okay, so actually there's nothing wrong with all this other stuff. And anyway, it's my choice. It's their choice. They can do whatever the heck they want, and I can do whatever the heck I want. Why do we have to continuously fight about it? Why do we have to tell each other that we're wrong? It's like, just get on with what you're doing and leave everybody else alone, you know. And it just bores me.
I completely agree. This urge to proselytize. Oh, like, where does that come from? You and I had a similar journey, actually, not so many years ago. I was all about natural and natural beauty to the point where I was even making my own anti-aging skincare with recipes I found using a range of essential oils. It was supposed to be like the best anti-aging stuff I could possibly make. And I was so proud of myself that my little vial of my anti-aging skin oil would cost hundreds of dollars in the shops, but at home I made it for XYZ amount. And anyway, long story short, I ended up with eczema on my face. My skin did not appreciate that combination of strong essential oils.
I wasn't
an idiot. I did use a carrier oil, but I'm an allergic, kind of sensitive person altogether. And here I was putting a concoction of almond oil with bits of, frankincense and rose absolute and... combination. And I've been plagued on and off by eczema. Currently it's better, knock on wood. But having it on my face, that was too much. And I finally figured out when I went to unfragranced, I wear perfume, but my skincare, my shampoo, my soap, everything else is unfragranced, and perfume just goes on my pulse points and no irritation.
Yeah, I've been there.
And I learned that those essential oils, I know we took a similar journey. It's like we came out the other end.
I have burnt my face with essential oils.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, I must have done something along those same lines because eczema, my skin definitely was not particularly happy. And then I learned, you know, there's so many allergens in those things. A lot of people take echinacea mixed with vitamin C or whatever to make a cold go away rapidly. And I'm very allergic to ragweed, and echinacea is on that same botanical family as is chamomile. So best avoided for me, at least.
Yeah, I've done all that as well, Elizabeth. I completely sympathize with you. I overused natural, safe, chemical-free products, as some people call them.
Safe. I can hear the quotation marks.
Yeah, safe. It's like there's so many allergens in this safe product, you know, and I didn't have a clue. I really didn't have a clue.
For whom? Yeah. For whom is this safe?
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's really pervasive here, you know. And Sephora has gone so far to have a whole area of their shop labeled, screamingly labeled, bold signage, clean.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's just a marketing
yeah,
device. It's all it is.
It is a fad.
Yeah. Is it fading? There's dermatologists debunking it all the time.
There is. And I mean, I don't love social media. I've got to be honest. I don't love it. I use it because it helps me with my work. And I think
yes.
The problem with social media is that anything goes. Anybody can say whatever they want and anybody can believe whatever they want. But luckily, there are more and more people now saying this is not okay, or this is rubbish, or this is not true, or if you want to know what this means, go and look here. But I don't know. I just think that there are people who just don't want to hear the message. There are people who just think they know better and they don't want to know. And unfortunately, I know quite a lot of them. And there's just no change in their minds. But all we can do is try. So with my perfumery courses, I specialize in natural perfumery. And so I teach natural perfumery because it's not something that many people can do properly, especially here in the UK. You have a bit mm-hmm. more of that in the US. And I feel very, very, very proud of something, Elizabeth. And this is that I have had some of these very dogmatic people who were into their clean beauty and their non-toxic, chemical-free, blah, blah. And now they still love their natural mm-hmm. stuff, but they no longer see it as safe and innocuous and the only option and everything else is evil. They have now got a more balanced view of reality, basically. And I think that's what we all need to
do. You should be proud.
Yeah, I'm proud of that. I'm very proud of that. It's like...
You should be.
Yeah, I am.
You definitely should be.
I haven't convinced everybody. But
yeah.
But the ones that are not convinced, they tend to go away.
You've removed the scales from a few people's eyes.
Yeah, I have.
That's an accomplishment. That's an important achievement. That's you've forever... Many people now see things in a more balanced way. That's a positive change you've affected upon the population of the world, and I thank you for it.
I wish there were more, but it's like a snowball.
It is noble.
You know, the more people you talk to, and then they change other people's minds, and it's just how it goes. You know, you just pass it on, really.
I forget who it was that said, I wish I could give their name, but it's more important to be able to understand than to be right.
Yeah.
And I love that so much. If we emphasize coming to understandings rather than clinging to our individual, however dubious, rightness.
Yeah, that is very true. I love that quote. I don't know who said it.
It is.
But I love it.
I do too. I have to look it up. I've got to attribute it to somebody. I know it's not me. Although when I was teaching, I was an English professor for a number of years, and then Meat for Tea got to a point where it was focused my energy on Meat for Tea and stopped being a professor, or, you know, I came to a fork in the road, so to speak, and I did tell one of my colleagues, you know, once I gave up the need to be right, I became a much better teacher.
Well, absolutely.
It's not up to me to show off how well I can interpret a work of literature. It's up to me to get my students practicing their interpretive skills. So, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
Similar thing. So I'm curious, and then maybe we'll go off on another tangent, but I'm curious, do you have an equivalent to Gwyneth Paltrow and the evil that is Goop?
In the UK?
In the UK.
No, I think it's just Gwyneth Paltrow and Goop. She's everywhere.
But there's not an across the pond variation.
There may be
version of her.
There may be, but I don't know it.
Not as famous.
I don't know it because it's not my thing. So there probably is for people who are more into that kind of thing. But because I tend to cover my ears and my eyes when I come across those things. I'm sure there is somewhere. I just don't know where.
It sounds like they haven't achieved the level of exposure, and that's good. I hope it stays that way for everyone in the UK.
Well, that's it. It's like Gwyneth Paltrow. She's so famous, you know, that she's got this empire, really. So I don't think anybody's going to come close to what she's doing.
An empire based on nonsense. Yeah.
Yes, I know.
Utter nonsense. My uncle is, he's retired now, but he was professor emeritus of chemistry at the University of Michigan.
That's pretty big.
Pretty acclaimed. Yeah, and you should hear what he says about things like this concept of clean in cosmetics, or even what he says about phrases like chemical sensitivity. It's like, well, you can have an allergy. You can have a sensitivity. Our bodies are made of chemicals. Mm-hmm. So if you really can't be exposed to them, you're going to be in trouble when your brain starts firing off norepinephrine and adrenaline and
self-implode.
All the other things the brain produces. I mean, we're made of chemicals. That's what we
Indeed.
Are. So funny. It's like, I need to avoid all chemicals. I'm like, well, okay. So first you die, then you become spirit matter, and then maybe you can avoid them. that might work.
And even then, you probably would be, you know, there would be some hydrogen, and you probably somewhere. You have to be made of something.
Yeah.
Even if it's invisible, something.
Of what chemicals is the soul made?
Oh, gosh.
That could be your next research project.
Somebody once said that to me, actually. But again, this is like a completely different tangent, Elizabeth. This is going back to the space science thing.
I encourage that.
And the crazy Glastonbury thing, right? So my PhD is related to astrobiology. So this is, astrobiology could be, it's a broad field. It's a multidisciplinary field that takes, you know, from obviously microbiology, geology, astronomy, cosmology, chemistry, physics. So all of it, you know, into one massive field.
I love that. that's what drew me to the field I was in, composition rhetoric, the same sort of thing.
It's not boring, that's for sure. It's really broad. But I specialize...
Endless.
Yeah, sorry, endless. What was that?
It's an endless. There's endless avenues in that field of study.
Exactly.
I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's always stuff going on, but obviously you have to specialize on something. And my side of astrobiology is searching for life beyond Earth. So the moment I talk about that, people imagine UFOs and aliens, and that isn't really at all what I do. So what I do is, as part of my PhD, is understanding how we can detect very, very old, I'm talking about billion years old organic molecules that have been degraded and they have broken down with the passage of time and cosmic radiation in the Martian environment. So I specialize on Mars. And what I look for, it's not even DNA, it's not even proteins, it's just not even the building blocks of proteins. I'm just looking at the smallest potential carbon chains, even, you know, hydrocarbon chains that tell us that something might have been there at one point. And I was trying to explain this to somebody here in Glastonbury in a very simple way. Say, well, imagine the smallest thing that you can see with a microscope. Well, it's so small that even with the most potent microscope, you can't see it. So it's completely invisible to the naked eye. And then he said, but have you thought about the other kind of life? And I said, what do you mean other kind of lives? He said, well, like
what?
The planets are alive. They've got their own soul, their own lives, you know, and like, I just didn't even know what to say. It's like, no, that's not what we mean by life. Oh, but there's also life, you know, it's like the planets are alive. So no, the planets are just
Oh my gosh.
And the earth is teeming with life. You may say it's alive because, you know, because it's a geologically active planet. So you can use alive as an analogy. But what he meant is that they had some kind of consciousness. And the other thing,
sentience.
Yeah, exactly. That there's a sentient being, which, you know, it might be, I don't know. I am open to the possibility that that might be true. And it would be amazing if that was true.
It's amusing to think about.
I mean,
about.
It would be amazing. But to this day,
it's mainly amusing.
Exactly. But some people are convinced that this is the case. And even more so, here in Glastonbury and in other places, they have this channeling sessions where they communicate with beings from Lyra. So this is a constellation in the sky, but these beings are from there, from a group of stars that are completely unrelated to each other in any way other than in the way that human beings see them in the sky. And they formed this constellation. And so that's the only reason that they are related, because we have made this construct with our eyes and our heads to make sense of it, but nothing
else. Sure.
But, and then there are beings as well that are from the Pleiades that communicate with us, apparently. But these are, they're just pure consciousness, you know, and so this person was trying to persuade me that I was looking for the wrong kind of life, because what I should be looking for was this impossible to find invisible life that is just pure energy. I just, honestly, Elizabeth, the world is just absolutely bonkers. I mean, the deeper you get into it, the worse it gets.
No, I mean, I don't know if you use phrases like this over there, but here we express our reaction to that kind of, I guess I won't be nice, idiocy as facepalm. Head desk.
Yeah.
Head desk. I can see you having a head desk moment.
Head desk. Okay, I like that.
Right then. Head desk, yeah. Because what do you do? Well, that's a thing.
Yeah, it's almost like your head is stuck in there. It's like it doesn't know what to do other than just hit something, because it just does not compute.
Just face palm.
Yeah.
And we'll be back in just a moment.
We have a very generous partner to Meet for Tea. We really appreciate them very much, because It's through ad support that we stay in print. So without further ado, let me tell you about Sucre Bay. Sucre Bay is perfume made by weirdos like you. And they're a cruelty-free, women-owned indie perfume and body products company who love making people smell good. Each scent is crafted by hand in their Washington State lab located in the woods. And honestly, I don't know where else you can find fragrances with names like Sea Hag, Don't Panic, Siren Song, Goth as Fuck. Those are just a few of their best sellers.
So great.
They have all sorts of other things too, bath care products. And also they partner with a lot of interesting people, including our friend Sarah McCartney of 4160 Tuesdays. Sucre Bay is one of the few places in the States you can get yourself some 4160 Tuesdays fragrances.
Yes. So head on over to sucrebay.com. Check out their wares. And we thank them.
Check
for...
Check the show notes for the proper spelling.
Mm-hmm. And thank you very, very much,
Sucre Bay. Should I do it on Sucre Bay now?
Oh, yeah. You know what? How's it spelled?
Yeah. So if you just go to sucrebeille.com, that'll get you there.
Yeah. We really appreciate their support. Thank you so much, Sucre Bay.
Thank you so much, Sucre Bay. We love you.
And welcome back.
Well, that whole conducting, and you'll hear the quotes, research on social media, on YouTube, you're basically just establishing a whole system of confirmation bias, right? You know,
yes. Absolutely.
Whatever you already believe, you're finding more things that agree with that and more things that agree with that. And it's not research. Mm-hmm. It's not empirical evidence. It's just...
And neither is denying everything else that contradicts what you think. That's the worst thing. There's so many things that contradict what you think, and yet you ignore them all.
I used to get furious. I actually wrote a paper about it when I was an undergrad. There's a whole school of people who like to make out that there's some sort of controversy over whether Shakespeare did or did not author the works of Shakespeare.
Oh, yes, I've heard about that. I'm
sure this, right, you've caught wind of this, right? Yes. Actually, one of my colleagues in grad school was involved in writing a book and doing a documentary film, kind of supporting the, to me, just asinine notion that William Shakespeare's works were not actually written by William Shakespeare. And actually there's abundant evidence that A, he existed, B, he wrote the things he wrote. There's abundant. There's empirical, hard, pick it up, hold it in your hands, evidence.
Yeah.
But yet that whole school of thought exists, and there's people that are really just quite strident in their insistence that no, yeah, it was actually Edward de Vere, the Earl of Oxford. And maddening. Wow. To me. Actually, the first time I met my husband's father, my husband had been recording my colleague, his audiobook for espousing that nonsense. And the first time I met his father, I sat down at the table with a head full of steam and spouted off just about every single expletive there is, and maybe even a few that aren't. Just,
yeah.
Because that's just, yeah, nonsense. I feel like I've just treated you to an hour-long rant session. Have you enjoyed it? Do you feel refreshed?
I have.
Here I was going to have a conversation asking all about your perfumes and your multiple awards and your studies. And it's just, we just sit and rant for an hour, but maybe we needed to do that. There are no rules on the Meet for Tea cast. My main thing is I like to get my interesting guests on and just engage in a conversation. Where it goes is where it goes.
Well, this is something, you know, just very briefly, like getting back to the perfumes that I love about Aromatum. And it's that it's not about the perfumes. It's about the conversation that the perfumes start. And that is how...
I love that.
So the original Aromatum project, it wasn't perfumes. It was started in 2017, so it's going to be 6 years. And it was when I was studying my degree in astronomy and planetary science. And just because I was curious about, you know, I wonder what this would smell like. Ooh, I've got it in my perfume lab. I'm just going to go and make a stink with it. So I did. And I thought, I can actually do the whole solar system with this. And
I love
and
that
I thought it would
so
be
much.
A great idea just to, you know, think about science in a different way, in a more creative kind of way. And so that's what Aromatum was about at the beginning. It was just, let's try and experience science with our senses rather than just somebody just telling us about it and boring us to death with it. And I did it as a kind of curious thing. And it was so successful. And it became this educational project that I go to schools with, I go to museums with, I go to music festivals. I have been invited to a few things this year that I can't quite disclose yet, but probably one of my proudest achievements today is about to come this summer. And when I can reveal it, I will tell you.
I'm excited.
But yeah, it's not that exciting. It's just an invitation by a very prestigious organization.
Cool.
And I remember when I started this, And I spoke to a few people in the perfume sort of industry saying, you know, I've got this amazing project. And they were like, oh, that's boring. Oh, there's nothing new. There's nothing exciting about that. And I thought, maybe I've got this all wrong. And these were all perfume people. And it's and this is something that really bothered me. It's like, can you not see beyond the perfume? Can you not see that olfaction, smells, odors are so much more than perfume, and they can really, really, really expand our horizons if we think about them creatively? This is all I wanted to do with Aromatum. And so, you know, I was told by quite important people in the perfume industry that it was a silly idea, that it was boring, that there was nothing to it. I'm like, okay, fair enough. I don't care what you say. I'm just going to carry on doing it. And suddenly I found myself going to, you know, speaking about it at NASA conferences and, you know, the NASA people talking to me and saying, how have you done that? Can we do this at our own museum and doing it, you know? And also going to schools in Spain and here, the Science Museum, the Natural History Museum, there's an organization in the UK, which is the Association for Science and Discovery Centres. So it's like an umbrella organization for the science museums, the discovery centres. And they contacted me and said, could you do a science-related activity using smells to talk about Mars? And so I created this activity that explains the story of Mars as a geological planet and how it changes by creating several smells that take you through the ages of Mars. And
how fascinating.
You know, and it's through this that I became an academician at the Academia del Perfume in Spain. And now I'm like in this elite of perfumers. And all these things are happening because I thought about smells in a different way that's not perfume. And that's all I ever wanted. And so the perfumes themselves came because people wanted them. Oh, can you not just do a perfume that smells nice? I'm like, okay, I will do something that smells nice. But it's not about a perfume that smells nice. It's about a perfume that starts a conversation, that gets people asking questions. Why does it smell like that? Why did you use this ingredient? Why did you use this note? What's the story behind it? And that then gives you the space to start a conversation about human civilizations in the future, destroying the planet, climate change, moving to Mars, whatever, you know, the moon missions. How do we know these things? Because of the space missions that we send to space. And that's it. It's a conversation starter to open the world of space in its entirety to anybody who may have some questions about it, without worrying about big words, about maths, about physics, about chemistry, without worrying about feeling silly that you're not going to understand it. Anybody can have knowledge and experience of space.
I love that.
And it's just about finding the right way of doing it. And that is what I wanted to do with Aromatum. And that I have achieved. And I'm really, really proud of that, actually. So there you go. That's
you
me.
Should be.
I'm proud of that.
I love it. I love it so much. When are you coming to... there's the Institute of Art and Olfaction in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I know of them, yes. And they do a really good work there. They do, actually.
There's another, what's the one in New York City? I'm forgetting the name because I am, but there's another. No. Well, I'll remember it and I'll put it in the show notes. I just want you to come out here selfishly. We so, need you to come here.
I've only been to the States for like the NASA conferences that I've gone to and to do some talks there. So that was before the pandemic. That was my first time. I went to the Houston conference and then I did a talk at the Astrobiology conference in Seattle. But I have a very good friend in what's the name? Is it Percy in Philadelphia? Little place in Philadelphia. And I really have to go and visit her. And we keep talking about me going over for a few weeks and maybe do some work there or some workshops or whatever. So I would love to go back to the States just go to different places, not just go to one place, maybe just visit a few places. So that's something that when, either when I finish my PhD or when days become 30 hours long, I will probably do.
Yes, we need to work on that. Well, let me know, because my middle daughter and her husband and my 14-year-old granddaughter all live in Philly. So I would. Many reasons to travel to Philly. So you could come out, and you could also meet people. You could meet my beautiful daughter Madeline and my granddaughter Una Poe, who likes making potions. She loves making potions and
really
perfumes herself.
So one of the things I'm looking at doing is actually running some perfumery workshops at this place, at my friend's place. She's got a massive sort of like homestead and a guest house.
Wonderful.
She has like a kind of, it's not Airbnb, it's like a proper guest house. It's lovely. And the idea is to probably organize something there. So if that comes to pass, I will most certainly let you know. I would love to meet you. And if you've got family in Philadelphia,
so
that would be grand.
Right? It's perfect. I wonder if the Franklin Institute, which is also in Philly, and is a science-based old venerable museum, I think that would be an institution that would be honored to have you come do a demonstration, a talk, a scent sniffing, whatever.
Yeah, that would be fun. I've done a few for the Royal Astronomical Society and for a couple of organizations in Spain as well. I'm going there next month as well to talk a bit about, you know, communicating science in a more accessible way. One of the dark sky sites in southern Spain. So people are interested. And I think the astronomy world in particular is starting to open up and starting to realize that they need to make things more open, more accessible for everybody. And it's not just about people who haven't studied science, but people with various disabilities and, you know, sight impaired, for example. I have done something at the Science Museum, which is called Astronights. They're called Sensory Astronights. So they open the museum at night for kids with various, you know, handicaps and disabilities to come and spend the night at the museum with their families in a very protected, sheltered environment. And I was there with some other people just doing astronomy activities that didn't rely on the usual way of doing activities. So we have 3D printing stuff, sounds, smells, and it's about using as many of your senses as possible to understand astronomy or science in general. In this case, it was astronomy. So I think that's really important and it's starting to catch on, which is why people have started contacting me.
That's brilliant. Can you believe we've been at this for over an hour?
Oh, wow. It's really cool talking to you, Elizabeth.
It's really cool. It went really fast, didn't it? I think we'd do well out for drinks and a dinner together. I can see us.
Yes, I think
having
we most certainly
a fine
would.
Time.
We have
yes.
a good rant as well.
Yes, we apparently needed that. That felt therapeutic. It's time for me to get to the only questions I ask. I only ask three at the end, which you've been so generous with your time. And the three can actually take a little bit of time. You'll see they can lead to answers that expand. But the first one is just, what are you reading these days? I imagine you're reading stuff for your scholarship, but...
So, yes, mostly scientific papers.
Of course.
But I just bought a book, which I'm actually going to start reading tonight, because it arrived today. It's not a new book, and I've been meaning to read it for a while. It's called The Midnight Library by Matt Haig.
Oh, I want to read that too. You're my...
I just got it.
You're my second or maybe even third guest who's recommended that one. I need to get my hands on that book.
So I've got it in my hands right now. So this is the one thing that is not related to my PhD that I'm going to start reading tonight. So there you go.
Oh, I'm excited for you. Yeah, I need to read that. When I finish, I'm reading an Irish book and I don't speak Gaelic well enough to pronounce the author's name properly, but it's called A Ghost in the Throat, and it's absolutely stunningly beautiful. Ooh, it's on top of doing Meat for Tea. I'm also in a book club because I must be insane. Uh-huh. there's no reason why I need to take on extra reading, but I like it. What are you listening to these days?
Well, I'm listening.
What are you putting into your ears?
So in terms of music, I actually I'm listening very much to my favorite music from my whole life, basically, which is Prince.
I love Prince.
He's like my favorite artist. He always has been since I was a kid.
Of course. He's such a genius.
Yeah,
I've loved him forever.
So I've been listening to him a lot lately, actually, and also to another one of my favorite bands, which are Depeche Mode.
I love Depeche Mode. Oh, you need to come over. We have, you know, well, my husband's a sound engineer, and he himself is an industrial
musician.
So, same. Yeah, okay, I'll give you a third one that I've been listening to.
Camp. You might appreciate them. I don't know if you will. Again, completely different genre, but I love this band, the Chemical Brothers.
Love them. Love them so much.
So those are the three things I've been listening to pretty much on repeat for the last few weeks.
I adore the Chemical Brothers. I actually listened to, I'm forgetting which album it was. It's an earlier album of theirs, but I wrote papers when I was working on my PhD. I wrote papers to rather loud music at the same time, and their album was one of the ones that I wrote a pretty complicated theoretical paper to while listening to it. Oh God, I'm forgetting the name of the album. It's going to drive me crazy. I could just walk in the other room and find it, but I'm not going to. We have over 2,000 vinyl albums here.
Nice.
With a huge, tons of industrial music, everything from Fluke to Chemical Brothers to Depeche Mode to all of it. You would have Nine Inch Nails. You'd have fun.
That's amazing.
You would have fun. It's vast. It's also like tons of classical, tons of jazz, like, everything.
Yeah, I love classical as well.
Everything from Bach to the Beastie Boys, the Dead Boys to WC, I like to say.
Yeah, you sound like me, actually, a bit of everything. I don't have much new stuff. I don't really listen to much new music. I don't like what they make these days.
I have a recommendation for something you would like.
Okay.
And they're two girls from the Isle of Wight, and their band is called Wet Leg.
Okay.
Check it out. You'll
Wet
like
leg.
It. And there's
okay.
also...
I'm putting it on my phone right now so I can look at it later.
Yeah. Their album's just eponymously... It's just Wet Leg, eponymously titled. There's also a band from Belarus called Molchat, M-O-L-C-H-A-T, second word, Doma, D-O-M-A. They are these young guys who are making music very similar to like 80s industrial.
Okay, cool.
And they're nailing the sound. And my husband's an industrial musician. I bought him Molchat Doma for his birthday last year, and he liked it a lot. So anyway, cool. Like I said, these questions can expand.
Yes.
What are you watching these days? See, I move in order from higher brow down to lower. No shame. You wouldn't believe the garbage I like to watch.
Well, no, I okay. So I am a binge watcher. Okay.
Nice.
I really am. I can't help myself.
I do that.
But right now I've just finished The Last of Us.
Oh, we're two episodes in. We're getting ready to start episode three tonight. We love it so much. I was actually going to ask you about that earlier because it seemed like something that would just intrigue you.
Oh, God, it's the best thing I've watched in so long. Oh, I'm a huge horror film, and that was just delicious. It was just beautiful. And that's without even thinking about Pedro Pascal. I mean, even if Pedro Pascal wasn't him, it still would be just as good. But to have Pedro Pascal there is even better.
We finished episode 2 last night. We're looking forward to starting on the 3rd episode tonight, if Mark's not...
Oh my God, it gets so much better.
I've heard so much stuff about the 3rd episode, in particular when Nick Offerman comes on board. So I'm excited.
It's just really good, honestly. Every single episode.
It's so good.
Every episode, the whole thing. We're painting the living room at the moment. Well, the painter. I just sit around watching him while I work. But as soon as it's done, I'm going to rewatch the whole series. I'm going to binge watch.
A second time.
Highly recommend it.
Yeah. Well, it's funny.
So I'll finish watching that.
I can't wait. Well, I'm a bad wife. I guess the only way I'm unfaithful, sometimes I'll start something and watch it without my husband. And then sometimes after I get an episode or two in, I start to feel he should probably be watching this with me. I better save it for him. So that's what I did. I watched the first episode, and then I was like, had my husband join me for the rest of it. But oh my God, it's amazing. And everyone's in it. I mean, Anna Torv.
Yep. I know.
The mycology.
Oh my God, it's just so good.
The premise.
It's just everything. It's just really, it's like so good. So good. Everything about it is so good.
Now, had you played the game before you saw it? You know, it's based on a video game.
Nope. No, I had not. I had heard of it.
Nor had I.
Yeah, I'm not a gamer, so I haven't really played any games other than Tetris when I was a kid, but and Mario Bros. But I knew it was a game, and I didn't know what to expect. I just had no idea. But it just gripped me from the beginning. And I love zombie things, even though I can't watch them at night on my own because I get nightmares. But I watched it. It's just too good not to watch it. I highly recommend that. But
you are brave. And these are scarier zombies because...
They're a bit more real, aren't they, I think, these ones.
I think they're scarier because of the nature of cordyceps, that they have a network.
Yeah.
And they can communicate along. Mm-hmm. They're a lot scarier than like Walking Dead zombies. A lot scarier because they can communicate.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's based on something that you could almost think that could actually, yeah, exactly. I can almost imagine something like that happening, you know, when an experiment goes very wrong.
I think about all the mushroom augmented coffees being promoted on sites like, well, Goop, for instance. And I'm like, nope, I'm not going to be having any cordyceps in my coffee anytime soon. No, thank you. No lion's mane for me. Hard pass.
So good.
Right? Oh my God.
But yeah, that's I've been watching that. The other thing that I'm watching and really into is the new series of The Mandalorian. Because isn't the 3rd series. I don't know if you're watching that. That's the Star Wars thing.
Oh, that's on our list.
It's very good. A warning, if you haven't watched The Mandalorian at all, or if you have watched seasons 1 and 2, you must watch The Book of Boba Fett before you watch season 3 of The Mandalorian.
Okay. We don't have the streaming platform that's available on, that's on in the States, that's on Disney Plus. And we don't do cable. We just pick a few streaming platforms and stick to those. But we've been thinking about maybe retiring.
Yes, it is Disney Plus. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We've been thinking about maybe like after we're done with The Last of Us, maybe killing HBO Max for a minute and getting Disney Plus. But I've also got to get Showtime so I can watch season two of Yellow Jackets.
I haven't watched that.
You have to.
But yeah, I do that as well. I do like hopping from one thing to another.
we'd be very compatible. We have similar viewing patterns and it looks like similar taste. I do recommend Yellow Jackets. It's one of the best.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really one of the best shows I've ever seen. And also it's Melanie Lynskey, Christina Ricci, and Juliette Lewis.
I've seen it coming up, so I will check it out.
If you took the story of the Lord of the Flies but made it teenage girls instead and set it in the 90s.
Oh, wow.
Then
okay.
Loosely.
Okay, I can watch that. Okay. It's
really wonderful. And the soundtrack is fantastic. It's a whole bunch of 90s industrial music, actually. Mixed up with some other stuff, but there's pretty heavy emphasis on that. It's just so perfect.
Oh. Excellent. So I shall be watching that.
I think we should probably close this off. I'm so glad we did this. Before I let you go, tell our listeners where they can find you and follow you, buy your things, attend your workshops, read your papers.
So I am not on Facebook and I am not on Twitter.
Fair.
I'm only on Instagram and I have my own profile, which is Marina_Barcenilla, which is like my name basically. And then from that profile, you can go into the MB Parfums account, the Aromatum account, and also my perfumery school account. But otherwise, my email address is marina@mbparfums.com. So people can contact me there. In terms of the perfumes, I sell them through my website. But in the US, there is an online shop called Sealed Essence that sells the natural perfumes, the MB Parfums, but nobody sells the Aromatum ones at the moment. So those are not available in the US. However,
they need to get on that.
Yes, please. If anybody is listening and, you know, is interested, do let me know. And but there is one of my retailers.
I'm going to talk with Andrea.
Okay, that would be cool. But there's a retailer in Spain called Les Secrets des Marais. They're in Madrid, and they sell online. And I'm pretty sure they sell to the US. They can ship to the US, and they sell all my perfumes as well. So yeah, you can. There's links to them on my website, which is mbparfums.com. And there is also a marinabarcenilla.com website where you can read about me in general and my science work as well and that kind of thing. And then there is aromatum.org. There's too many places to contact me, so I don't know. I don't know if you have anything on the podcast with links or anything like that. If not, that may be the best place.
Oh yeah, we'll put them in the show notes.
Yeah, I'm kind of all over the place. I can send you the links so you can put them on the show notes. And in terms of papers, I'm just going to say the thing that I told you in the message. When I finish this PhD, I'm going to do a new PhD. I have decided it's going to be a new PhD on Pedro Pascal. So
yay! So
Pedro, if you're listening, you are my research subject. Contact me, please. I'd love to study you.
Yes, you'll probably need 24/7 access, right? To do thorough research.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah, and this is probably.
And obviously, I am Spanish, so I am bilingual as well. So yes. There you go.
This will be an in-house project too. He'll have to be a residential research subject, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yes. And I'm pretty sure I'll have a lot of lab volunteers.
I imagine. That depends on how much you feel like you want to share, Marina. You might want to keep your subject to yourself.
It's for science, so.
Oh, true. It's all for the good of science.
That would be greedy. That's not very good.
This is a noble pursuit, after all.
Exactly.
What are you going to be studying exactly? Regularity of features or ripped abs? What's
it? I have no idea. It will come to me. It will come to me, I'm sure. I'll just have to look at him and go, hey, Pedro. You know, what do you think we should, you know, what would you like to find out about yourself? And then I will study that. I'll do something that he wants to do.
What a noble pursuit. I think that's wonderful. I'll look forward to reading that book.
Yes.
And maybe there'll be a line of Pedro Pascal inspired fragrances.
I'll probably make a little Grogu one for the Mandalorian.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
How much fun. Thanks so much. This has been just a treat.
Same here.
All right. Bye-bye, Marina. We'll have to do it again.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye.
Well, all right.
Wasn't that great?
I gotta say it was.
Pay attention to the show notes for her website. You'll want to visit it. You want to check out Arome Atom. You want to read all about her cool projects because they are many.
She does perfume and she's a space scientist.
And she makes perfumes that smell like space.
What's that smell?
Space.
Space. All right, folks. Thanks again for sticking around for another episode of the Meet Your TeaCast. We will see you in a couple weeks.
Thanks for joining us. Tell your friends and family to listen to the Meet for TeaCast.
Yes, please. Please do. The Meet for TeaCast is produced by Elizabeth McDuffie and Meet for Tea, The Valley Review. Mixed by Mark Allen Miller at Zone Lab, East Hampton, Massachusetts. Visit Meet for Tea at www.meetfortea.com. Please consider going to anchor.fm to make a contribution through our contribution page. You can reach us through meetforteacast@gmail.com, or you can leave a voice message at anchor.fm/meetforteacast. We welcome suggestions for contents for the Meet for TeaCast. If you've attended a Meet for Tea Cirque and want to hear from one of the bands or one of the spoken word contributors, please let us know. All portions are copyright Meet for Tea and their respective holders. Vote for Meet for Tea on your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Twitter at Elizabeef, Meet for Tea on Instagram, and on the Meet for Tea and Meet for TeaCast Facebook pages. Meet for Tea is available everywhere you get your favorite podcasts.